We have the incredible honor of speaking to the one and only Mr. Donny Osmond here, singer, actor, TV series host, best-selling author, Broadway star, incredible performer. Donny Osmond, welcome to WICC. How are you?
What a great intro that was, Melissa. Thank you.
I mean, I'm kind of a fan. I'm trying really hard to be appropriate and not have my bosses say, come on, be professional. So I'm trying the best I can. But this is a real honor.
Keep going. I love it.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. What I think is extraordinary about you is it's not that common to have somebody who connects with so many different generations, so many different people, but you have a talent that has gone on for decades, and you don't age, by the way. I would love to know your secret.
If I'm ever feeling depressed, I will call you.
I'm serious, though. It just seems like you have energy that goes on for days, and you connect with so many different generations of people.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing what I've been through for the last 6 decades of show business. That's what this show is all about that I'm bringing to Waterbury. And I guess Foxwoods is close to you as well, right?
It is, yeah. Yep, it's right here in Connecticut.
August 3rd. But on Tuesday, I bring my entire Las Vegas show, not just a concert, but a whole, almost a Broadway production, but my full show that I have in my residency in Las Vegas, Waterbury. And with that, it kind of answers your question. For 90 minutes, you actually see what I've done for the last 6 decades in reinventing myself and coming up with new product. Because it's so important for longevity to reinvent yourself.
How have you reinvented yourself? And how many times would you say you've had to do that in the showbiz world?
Oh, my goodness. What a question. I did an interview not long ago. Somebody said they counted up five to seven careers that I've been through in my entire life. Because, when you go back to it, I started when I was 5 years old on the Andy Williams show. Mm-hmm. A certain generation will remember that. I think it was your son that you mentioned knows me as Captain Shang from Mulan. There's this, and I talk about this in the show. There's this little 8-year-old girl that saw me the other day and walking out of the store, and she froze. She's 8 years old, and she goes, "Oh, you're the Peacock." I was the first masked singer.
Yes,
and then there's
that's
the whole
so funny.
Puppy Love Generation or Soldier Love Generation. Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, Dancing with the Stars winner. I mean, it goes on and on and on. In fact, Melissa, what I did is I put a rap in the show. It's kind of like Hamilton, where everything is in rhyme. It starts from the beginning and goes chronologically through 6 decades. It's a 10-minute rap. It's probably one of my favorite parts of the show.
Wow. Wait, that's really,
yeah.
Really neat. Now, did you compose that?
I was part of it. I can't take all the credit. Keith Harrison, my music director, did most of the work on that thing.
What a cool idea, though.
I want that. And everything I say in the rap, you actually see visually on the huge screens. So it's not just a rap. It's a chronological 60 years of show business in 10 minutes.
That's amazing, though. What would you say are some of the best highlights or some of the best moments that you loved the most in your career?
Oh, that's tough. That's a very tough one to answer because it's kind of like picking a favorite child. You can't do it. And when you've been in the business as long as I have, there's a lot of peaks, definitely a lot of valleys in that as well. But I would have to say, let's just go through the 60 years. I think Puppy Love was a big Donny and Marie show. Joseph, I think the biggest from a career-changing point of view would be Soldier of Love. That's how I opened the show. They called that the comeback of the 80s. It hit in 89. And even though it may sound like a promotional line, but it's quite topical, this show is probably the biggest all-encompassing, it is the biggest show from an all-encompassing point of view that I've ever put together because everything's in it.
Now, this is part of your tour, correct?
Yes. In fact, Waterbury kicks off the entire tour.
How exciting. Now, have you performed in Waterbury before?
I don't think I have.
Oh, you're going to love the theater. It's beautiful.
My promoter says the theater is really nice.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty legendary. It's a beautiful, beautiful venue.
Well, I'm bringing, like I said, the entire Vegas show. It's not just a concert. I was just reading in the news. Elton John did his last concert in Sweden. People want to go to an event. If they want to hear your music, go listen to Spotify or something. If they want to see it, go to YouTube. But people, especially nowadays, they want an experience. And so I decided to put together the ultimate Donny Osmond experience of 6 decades of show business in one show. And I pulled it off. In fact, this is kind of fun. I released my 65th album, but I don't want it to be just about the new album. So I put every album I've ever done in the show.
There
is a segment, Melissa. I call it the request segment. where all 65 albums are on the huge screens behind me, and anyone in the audience could pick any song ever recorded on any album, and we do it.
Wait, that's kind of intimidating. I mean, you're a performer. I don't know. If anyone could do it, it's Sonny Osmond. But what an amazing concept. I've never heard of anyone doing that.
Well, yeah, the show is different every night, and audience gets to hear what they want to hear.
That is so cool. Now, well, this will be the first one of the tour. I was going to say, have you had any audiences, like, you know, brawling over, I wanted this track. No, I wanted this one. Do you anticipate that happening?
It happens. Because in Vegas, I have to limit it to about 12 to 15 minutes.
Sure. Okay.
Because I have to do a 90-minute show. Whereas Waterbury, I can open it up if I want to. If people are having fun, let's do some more.
Wow. That's amazing. And there are still tickets available. I'll give you all the information at the end of this. But, Donnie, why would you...
Well, actually, the easiest way to get tickets, easiest to remember is Donnie.com.
That's very simple. That's how you know you're a big deal, is when you just have to use your first name and they've already got a website for you. That's when you know you've made it. Bar anything, it's like when you just have Donnie.com and it's like, oh, it's Donnie Osmond. It's fine. Nobody.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
That's amazing. So you could certainly get tickets there. And Donnie, for people who are on the fence, I don't know why you'd be on the fence, but let's say they're on the fence about coming to see your show to kick off your tour. Why should they come and experience it?
Oh, I see fence sitters every night, especially the guys. Because, you know, there's a certain generation that'll say, you know, he was a former teen idol. I'm not going to like this. My wife or my girlfriend dragged me to this show. But at the end of the show, the guys are the first one to stand on their feet because of what they just went through the last 90 minutes to 120 minutes, whatever it might be. And the amount of stuff that I've packed into 6 decades of show business is so fascinating for me to watch some of the guys with an attitude, with their arms folded or whatever. By the end of the show, they are having the time of their life. When you see it all in context, so many things to the 6 decades of career, of show business.
Oh, absolutely. Mr. Donnie Osmond, I would be very mad at myself, and I know my 5-year-old would never forgive me if I didn't ask you this. Do you mind singing even a lyric of I'll Make a Man Out of You?
Oh, that's one of my favorite songs. Let's get down to business. To defeat the Huns. You can play that to him.
Oh, I will. I certainly will. Chase.
You tell Chase Captain Shang says hi.
Oh, my gosh. Amazing. Oh, amazing. You are amazing. I love that you are coming to Connecticut. You're kicking everything off here in Waterbury. And I thank you again so much, Mr. Donnie Osmond, for coming on to WICC. You have no idea how special this is. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Melissa. Good talking with you.
Great to talk to you, too.
Family, relationships, and personal growth. Professional counselor Julius Dudix is here to help. Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
It's been a while since we've discussed this topic, but it's really important. Caregivers support. And is there a way to really try to cultivate a healthy relationship between what usually is a caregiver and their older parents who they're taking care of? So Julius Dudix is back, our morning show counselor, to talk about really what happens in these relationships when you go from being a kid, or I should say somebody's child, to their caregiver, and how can we make it as healthy for the two parties as possible. So, hey, Julius, how are you? Welcome back.
Good, Melissa. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, this is a topic that comes up periodically and with well-intentioned parents and well-intentioned kids. But, you know, if we can clearly define the issue, the problem, so mm-hmm. much of the therapeutic process is defining what is the issue. And I think the mistake is that we continue to insist that parents meet our emotional needs while granting us independence. And their mistake is they try to attempt to preserve the same relationship they had with us when we were smaller. Mm. And yet they can't understand why we just don't grow up. And so that's really the heart of the issue. But all relationships kind of evolve. And it's almost as you get older, parents don't order, they advise. But there needs to be that mutual respect in the relationship or else it's not healthy. And you have to really acknowledge your differences and acknowledge that mom and dad are people, too.
How do you, though, strike that balance, Julius? How do you, because a lot of times there's a generational issue where no matter how old you get, your kids are always going to be your kids. And to some extent, we understand that. But to another extent, you have, well, when do the kids become seen as adults or be seen as they're in the same playing field as you, or that you need their help, and to sort of take a step back and say, okay, I'm going to take direction from you. Like, how do you do that without coming off as disrespectful to your parents' generation, to, you know, to them?
Sure. Yeah, you want to respect the generation and their background. And certainly, you know, you need to understand their past childhood and their relationship with their grandparent or their relationship with their own mother or father or stepfather or whatever. But feelings about past hurt can linger and really affect the way your parents think. It's about developing mutual respect. But for the child, they have to earn that through decisions they make. And what happens a lot of times is if you as a child and you're growing up and you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, you're not making really good decisions. You got to be honest. You know, what's the truth, Melissa? I always ask clients, what is the truth? Am I really making my best decisions? And does my parent react to the decision I'm making? And then I take it as a personal attack on me, and they're attacking me as opposed to focusing on the issue and attacking the issue. That's what so many people do. It's detrimental to a relationship. So are you making good decisions? And really, what's the need that you both have from each other? And where's the disconnect?
So we're talking to Julius Dudix, who's our morning show counselor, about the relationship between a child and their parent. But it becomes later down the road, a caregiver and their parent, because they've stepped into this role of a lot of times, Julius, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we've stepped into these roles where you're not always really talking about parents who are living in assisted living or are living in nursing homes. They're staying at home or they're moving in with their adult children or they're creating these in-law apartments. And so that's also, I would think, where you have a lot of tension is there's no escaping it. This is you're mixing an awful lot of personal right with your job almost.
Yeah. And that really, it is taxing. It is so taxing. My fear is, and what I've seen over the years, is you can teach your brain. We talked about how you can teach your brain to respond certain ways, to really be harsh and cruel and mean to a parent unwittingly. You love them, but because you're just so exasperated, all of a sudden you find, you know, you're being a little bit more snarky or critical or angry. And it is just so exasperating. So you have to acknowledge the fact that, yeah, I am tired. I am fatigued. And you have to acknowledge that you're different from mom and dad. And you know, you've got to almost accept that your parents aren't going to be perfect. And they're a product of their own environment and growing up experiences. But the key is that today you have the power to influence the relationship with your parents in a positive way, or today you could do it in a negative way. Today's a new day, Melissa. And for some of your listeners out there that are wrestling with this, yes, I get the fatigue. It is exasperating. And you really love your parents. But maybe you've trained yourself to treat them in a way that is really not the best. So you just press the reset button and say, hey, you know, today is Tuesday. Today's a new day. And I'm going to live today and we're going to start over, because you have that power within you to do that.
Our morning show counselor, Julius Dudix, is here. And we're talking about the relationship between a caregiver and their parent. And one of the questions I asked before the break, Julius, was the emotional distress of becoming a caregiver to your parent. Parents are like anybody, they're aging and they're changing. And so for some kids, part of the emotional, I think, breakdown when you're a caregiver is that you're not dealing with the same person who you remember raising you so many years ago. So like in one regard, you want them to treat you like an adult, right? We want you to treat you like you're an adult. But at the same time, I think there is this emotional component of, I'm not dealing with the same mother and father I dealt with 30 years ago when they were raising me, or when I was an adult, but like, you know, post-college adult. You know, you're now looking at somebody who might be a little bit more finicky or a little more strong-headed or more stubborn. you know, whatever the case may be. And that can be just emotionally draining and taxing, knowing that you're not dealing with the same person you thought sure. you knew for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like you have to get to know your parents all over again.
Exactly.
Yeah, because they do change, Melissa. We all change. But then part of the whole process is to accept and acknowledge the fact that, hey, you're different and it's okay. But you've got to separate emotionally by trying to define yourself. And I always say to the kids, try to, the best you can do, to try to stop winning their approval.
That's hard. That's hard. I still struggle with this one. This is a real tough one for me. Yeah, for real. Yeah, that's a hard one.
Yikes. It is. It's hard for everybody. So you acknowledge it and you say, yeah, you know, I've been in a rut of trying to win mom or dad's approval for years and years and years. And I base my own feelings about how they interpret what I'm doing. But, you know, you've got to realize that they're a product of their own growing up experiences. And almost it's like you've got to be clear about what is acceptable and what is not acceptable in a relationship. And sometimes, Melissa, you got to avoid some of the old topics, toxic topics that come up quite often, which were never really resolved. And they only
like what,
pain.
Though? Like, what do you mean by that? Is a toxic topic?
A toxic topic, how I'm raising, you know, the grandkids, you know, or.
Okay.
Or yeah.
The pressure point, the triggers, if you will, the absolutely. Things you shouldn't say to other people. And that certainly includes your family criticizing you for. I gotcha.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it could be cooking, you know, for the mother-in-law. It could be cooking. It could be the way you do laundry. It could be some really insignificant things, but they're toxic because they've been sources of conflict before.
Mm.
And it's almost like you got to look for new activities that you can do with them together. And it's almost like you've got to almost... if it's a strained relationship, sometimes if it's really, really bad, I always encourage the clients to just maybe email for a little bit or just shoot a voicemail or text, communicate that way if it's so bad. But don't neglect it. Don't walk away from it. Make sure that you're not you're not stuck, because we always say, you know, it's not a good place to be when you're stuck in a relationship. So if you're having those issues, give it a little bit of time, but then make sure that you're going to have a plan of action to get out of this, because it is so painful. Because I know that parents are, hey, we're all going to leave this earth someday, but you want to leave it in the best state you can possibly remember. And you want to make sure the relationships are to the point, the relationships are, as much as it depends upon you, are healed. So
but
let them be themselves. Set some good boundaries, express, you know, appreciation. Look for some mutual interest as they change, as they get older. Do stuff with them. Involve them in the whole process of setting boundaries. If there are significant issues, try to hit them head on. Don't run away from them. Because if you run away, it's going to only cause anxiety and dysfunction, more dysfunction in the relationship. But Melissa, there's hope. Today's a new day. Today's Tuesday. It's a new day. You can press the reset. There are so many. Go to resources. That's another one. There's so many good senior programs out there, or there are so many caregiving agencies that can give help in how to mend or how to begin to address relationships. And again, sometimes you just have to kind of stay in your corner for a little bit and cool down, because that's going to help too. But then you don't want to neglect the issue. You want to attack the issue, not the individual. But there's hope. There's hope.
Right. You could press the pause button, but just make sure you get back to the game. You know, make sure that you don't just leave the game frozen on the screen. It's true. You know, press the pause button, but, you know, make sure you don't forget that you've got the game is still, you know, left it on. You left the console on. So go finish the game. Julia, such great tips. And I thank you so much. I know it's a very personal matter for a lot of people, but I think you've created some solace this morning. So thank you.
Good. Thank you for having me on, Melissa. And thank you for all you do.
I appreciate you. Julia Zudyk, our morning show counselor here on WACC. Some major decisions happened recently from the U.S. Supreme Court, and a big one meant striking down the Biden administration's plan to cancel or reduce student loans. So the question is, what can borrowers expect, especially if they are saddled with high student loans? Well, we learned that there is a way you could steer through some of that student lending and loan repayment thanks to AAA. Joining us now is Don Kerr, who is AAA Northeast Bank's Director of Student Lending and College Services. Don, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am fantastic, and thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So, Don, first of all, was AAA anticipating that this program was going to go away and they wanted to make sure they had something in place to help members and non-members?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the thought process, that regardless of how the Supreme Court was going to rule the additional debt ceiling deal, you know, kind of put the wheels in motion that these loans were going to go into repayment. And since it's been 3 years, we knew there were going to be a lot of people that would need help and assistance in navigating this process.
So I want to reiterate, this is not just for AAA members. Non-members can also utilize your services?
Absolutely correct. We don't limit it to our members. We will give advice and guidance to anybody who needs it.
So when you say advice, what are we talking about here? It looks like you guys have free financial assistance on different options. Tell me about that.
We do. So we provide assistance with planning and paying for college at no cost, and as well as navigating the student loan repayment life cycle. But there's lots of options people can use to help manage their student loan debt. The levels that are out there, it's of debt that exists, it's just become an issue that more and more people need help with.
Can you give me sort of an idea, Don? I know it's very complicated and everybody's case is going to be different. But say I'm a parent, I'm calling in and I know that my kid, you know, certainly is still carrying over debt, or I anticipate that they are going to have debt. What does sort of the process look like to get AAA's help?
So they just need to reach out to us and schedule some time. We do Zoom meetings or Microsoft Team meetings or, you know, conference phone calls, whatever is needed. Just simply reach out to us and we'll schedule a date and time where we can meet with everybody, kind of sit down, assess their current situation, what their loans look like, how they're structured, get a sense of what their goals are, what they're trying to accomplish, whether it's pay off the loan sooner, get a lower interest rate, lower monthly payments, and then we'll present all the options to them and kind of answer their questions so they can choose what's right for them.
AAA Northeast has a bank director of student lending and college services, and that is Don Kerr, who is with us now to talk about options you have if you are scrambling and trying to figure out what to do next when it comes to student loan debt. Now, Don, what if you are in the boat of parents or guardians where your children are not in college yet? In fact, they're far from it. Maybe they are just born, or they're on the way, or they are only in elementary school. Does AAA also help with planning to make sure that you can pay for a good chunk of college? Or, like, is there any kind of free financial advice from AAA for parents who are preparing for potential student debt or preparing to pay for college in some regard?
So we do have a lot of services around starting around the high school age. So when it's time to start thinking of the colleges that maybe you want to attend, what's the right type of college for you? How do you do the tours and the search process? We always advise everybody to start saving as early as possible. And generally the best way to do that is using 529 savings plans. Always look to see what savings plans your state offers, because there can be some additional tax benefits that are offered. So that's a good place to start.
So, Don, I'm curious, how long has the Student Lending and College Services program been available for AAA Northeast?
Since 2004.
Really?
We've been doing this for a long time, and not a lot of our members or even a lot of the public out there know about it. So it's a great service that we don't charge for, that I think more people should take advantage of.
I mean, I have to confess to you, Don, I've been a member of AAA as long as I've been a driver. I had no idea that you guys offered this as long as you have. I had heard of it recently from Fran Mako maybe a few years ago, but I didn't realize it's been around for almost 20 years. That's incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those overlooked benefits of being a AAA member.
I also, I don't know, Don, maybe I'm crazy, but like when I'm thinking student loans, I'm not thinking AAA. Why did AAA create a program like this? Because maybe that's part of it is that, I don't know, when I think AAA, I think travel. I think travel or I think car insurance. Like I'm not really thinking student loan. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Not a lot of people do. And I think really why we got into this space is through, you know, experience of our own leadership, putting their own children through school and realizing how complicated a process it can be, from searching for that right college to filling out all the financial aid forms to applying for different types of loans, whether it's a home equity loan or a student loan, to pay that tuition bill when it comes. And then afterwards, navigating, managing that student loan debt. I just think through our own employees' experience of putting their own kids through, they realized there was a big need for this.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I think it's just really neat. And if you fall under the category that I was in, which is I had no idea that AAA offered something like this. Again, it's free financial assistance on repayment options and ways to begin paying off hefty student loans. And this is for not just AAA members, but even non-members. So, Don, what would you suggest if people want to reach out to you guys? Is there either a number or a website that you prefer they start with?
Yeah, of course. They can call me directly at 401-868-2000, and I'm at extension 2433. They can also visit us online at AAA.com. Under loans and banking, we do have a tool where they can schedule an appointment with me at their convenience.
And I know you said that you are willing to do phone conversations, Zoom conversations, all of that. Are you guys doing in-person meetings as well, if necessary?
I do in-person meetings, as necessary. I do still meet people in the branches. I used to do it on a regular basis prior to COVID hitting. So much has changed since then. So
yeah.
Even a lot of my longtime clients prefer to do Zoom or Teams meetings.
It's much more convenient for sure. But, you know, you always have the people who are going to ask if they can come in person.
Yep. And we can, with enough time, we can certainly arrange that.
That's excellent. Well, Don, I really appreciate your help with this and for giving us the scoop. Like I said, I was not aware until recently that AAA even offered this to members and non-members. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Melissa in the Morning talks with career strategist and workplace expert Julie Bauke. It's Julie on the Job. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
I was always taught, even with your own family, don't talk about religion or politics, right? Like, you don't want to start that controversy train. And so you certainly don't really need to talk about it with your colleagues. I thought this kind of went without saying, but apparently not so much. According to a new article in the Wall Street Journal, if you got kiddos in the car, just maybe move the sound to the front of the car so they could keep bopping in the back. But you can listen to this because it's very interesting. The Wall Street Journal highlighted that young workers seem to be talking about sex more often at work. Have the rules on what's appropriate to discuss with coworkers changed? Julie Bauke is here from Julie on the Job to dive into this one. Hey, Julie, how are you?
Hey, this makes me go eek and cringe a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Like it's funny, but I don't even talk. I mean, I'm a very, very private person. People always, you know, kind of like think, oh, she's really bubbly and she's outgoing, and I am, but I'm a very surface kind of person. I have a lot of trust issues, actually. So I don't really share an awful lot with anybody. But like this to me is bizarre. I don't even sit here and talk about this kind of stuff with like my own sisters or like my girlfriends. So I can't even imagine if I was approached at work. I think I would just melt to the floor. Maybe I'm crazy. I don't know.
No. I agree. And you know, this is obviously not everybody, but when you think about it, it makes sense. So we've got Gen Z has been raised with social media and they're used to talking about everything. I mean, that's just what they're used to putting things out there. that would never occur to us to have put out there. I mean, number one. Number two, we've talked several times about how the boundary between your personal and professional life has really eroded the last several years because of technology, because of COVID, because of really just how we don't have those, okay, 5 o'clock, see ya, boundaries.
Right, there's
anymore.
No definitive boundary because a lot of you are working from home. You're mixing the two together. But this seems pretty obvious to me, Julie. Like, I think it's trashy when anybody talks about this kind of stuff. I got to be honest. Like, this is, I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. And I think there are some great things that Gen Z has brought to the table. For example, mental health. I love the fact that for the first time in my entire career, I could sit here and tell my whole audience last week, I am not going on vacation. I am not, you know, doing some luxurious thing. I am taking a week off from my mental health. I thought this is a very cool thing. And over 12 years that I've worked in news, I have never been able to say, hey, you know what? This industry is a lot sometimes. And sometimes a girl's got to walk away from it for a second and disconnect. I am taking a mental health break. So thank you, Gen Z, for normalizing that. Because there's no way even 5 years ago I would have ever told the public that I took a mental health break. So there are some great things about being open. But then I feel like there are things and then there are things. I mean, when is this ever okay to talk about, I feel like?
So here's an example. So let's say that you are polyamorous or you are in an open relationship. Let's say, if you share with your coworkers that you are a polyamorous or in an open relationship, I think that's generally okay. But it's what is gone beyond that is describing your sexual exploits of the weekend, giving detail and asking people. One of the examples they gave in the journal article was condom recommendations, those sort of things, getting details about your sex life beyond just the basic, I am a lesbian, I'm married to a woman. Those are the kind of things that are about you and are really part of who you are. And I think that's okay. I mean, sometimes people say, oh, it's being shoved in my face. I don't buy that. I think it's part of who you are. But when you start getting into things that maybe you only generally talk about with your girlfriends, and I'm with you, I don't talk about that stuff, even with my best friends.
Mm-hmm.
But I have plenty of people my age who do share more than I do.
Right.
And yes, it makes me cringe, but it really is. When you start adding in, these are the people that I work with, not only can it make it really awkward, and so this thought that I'm going to share whatever I want and you can just deal with it, I think is immature, and I think it's going to come back and bite you in the butt. And workplaces or organizations that allow this, let's talk about allow, but I also think from a company standpoint, this can devolve quickly and turn into a sexual harassment or a hostile workplace type of situation. So there's risk all the way around.
Yeah, it really does create, I feel like, a lot of blurred lines. Now, Julie, for people who might be listening saying, hey, we have a real family-friendly atmosphere. We're very comfortable. We're not judging. Like, this is I think you're blowing it out of proportion. What if they feel like, okay, business is business when you're at the workplace, but when we're out and we're doing our own thing, it's totally, now you're off work grounds. It's okay to have these conversations. Do you agree with that mindset, or do you feel like what's inappropriate among colleagues is inappropriate among colleagues?
It's we all get a lot out of, and according to the Gallup organization, there is great value at having a best friend at work. Like a work best friend. And that is absolutely essential when you look at why people go to an organization, why they stay, what makes them happy and engaged at work. One of the biggest things is having a work best friend. And so, it's really important to have friends at work. So let's say your small department goes out and there's three of you and you're all hang out on the weekends and you're out at lunch on a Wednesday and you talk about what happened at work and what happened over the weekend, and you get into great detail. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to, quote unquote, police that. But let's say on, you know, the next week you invite a fourth person along, and it's an older person from another department, and you act just like you did last Wednesday and say, you know, how's that so-and-so you're dating? And it tells about the weekend. And then you go into great detail in front of that fourth person who's you have to, you know, my favorite word when it comes to work, and we all develop this at a different time, is using good judgment.
Right. Read the room.
It isn't all about you.
Right.
Read the room. It isn't all about you and what you want to share. You have to say, is this appropriate? I'm in a meeting with my boss, and I'm talking about the details of my sex life. I think that shows poor judgment because, from the boss's perspective, I might want to put you, because of your professional skills, on a really exciting project with a customer that's our most valuable customer. That is going to give me pause, because if you don't know what those fine lines are of what to talk about at work, then you with your work coworkers, you certainly aren't going to be good at discerning that when you're on a customer site. And that's where you really get into, all of a sudden, it's not just your business, it's the company's business.
Julie Bauke's here. We were reading an article from the Wall Street Journal talking about what colleagues are talking about at work. And sometimes it could just be seen as kind of cringy or inappropriate. You know, Julie, we've talked about this before, where Monday morning, you definitely shouldn't be walking in and talking about how drunk you got over the weekend or maybe some bad decisions you made. And I feel like this connects perfectly with what we were just discussing, which is like your private business, your intimacy, who you sleep with, whatever. That's just your own business. And I think if you're friends with people at work, like, that's fine. I've got a group of friends here at work that I absolutely adore. Still wouldn't talk to them about that, but I love them. But I just think work is work and personal is personal. And sometimes it has gotten kind of a little too meshed together. My question is, what if you run a company and you find that there is this shift of not one or two workers, but like the aura, the feel of your workplace is that we're just in an open forum. We could just talk about just about anything here, but it makes you feel uncomfortable. Like, what rights do you have as an employer to say, listen, not here, never going to be appropriate, I don't like it. Like, what rights does an employer have to kind of shut down that kind of conversation?
Well, the first thing I would do in that situation is find a good labor and employment lawyer and talk to them about what kind of policies they should enact, how you should communicate it, how you should enforce it, and really how to get everybody on board. And because from an employer's standpoint, you have liability. If you have a group that keep talking about inappropriate things, and all of a sudden, so here's the kind of stuff that can happen. So, us girls are all talking about, you know, our exploits, and a guy in the office overhears it and thinks, well, I can talk about that stuff too. And then he starts talking about it with them, to them, starts figuring, well, they're comfortable talking about it, I'm going to jump right in. Well, then he takes it too far in the eyes of some of the women. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they're in an uncomfortable work environment, and he maybe believes that he's got a chance with one of them. And so because they've been so open talking about it, he jumps right in, and all of a sudden they are really uncomfortable. It creates an uncomfortable work environment.
Right.
And so that's a very simple example of the risk. And so thing I would do is talk to a labor and employment lawyer and just say, you know, how do you get around this, and how do you present, you know, how do you create an environment in which it's threading a needle here, creating an environment in which people are comfortable being themselves, but they know what the boundaries are. And, you know, this brings to mind an example. I was talking to a young person a couple weeks ago, and he was giving me this. He's like in his late 20s. He was giving me this example. And this is the kind of stuff that I think is more common than what we're talking about here, where people talk about their sex lives. He was on a call, on a Teams call or a remote call, with a partner in his firm and a customer who had yet to come onto the call.
Like on board, right, okay.
Right. The partner texted this person and said, this is the hottest customer I have. Man, she had these camo leggings on one time. Wow, man, blah, blah, blah. And this person was like, oh, my God, you know, recognizing immediately it's really not okay to talk about your customers that way.
Yeah, that's weird.
And, yeah, she comes on. She comes on the call, and he again texts this person, oh, man, she's really not aged well, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, gosh, this is just not going well. Oh, my gosh.
This happens a lot.
I know. I know. I've experienced that before. Not from this workplace, I will say. But
yeah.
Working in the news world, are you kidding? Do you know how many times it's like a guest will come into our TV station or something, and it's like when a client who's connected to the sales, and they're like, oh, you'll love him. He's gorgeous. And I'm like, oh. I just have to ask him a couple questions and just let him on his way. I don't know. Oh, it's weird. I don't like it.
So here's my advice. So he said, what do you do? And I said, man, I said, what I would love to tell you to do, I'm going to give you what I think would be the perfect world answer. And I'm going to give you what I think is probably realistic. This guy was a partner in this person who was doing this, a partner in the firm.
Mm-hmm.
And this young man is like, I said, man, I'd love to tell you to say I'm not comfortable with this conversation. I don't like talking about our customers that way. And I'd love a world in which we could say that, and the person would then recognize, oh, you're right, I shouldn't have done that. Unfortunately.
But you know what's funny, though, about that, Julie, is like, why? That reminds me so much of the people who are like, I can't go to a party and not drink without people asking me if I'm pregnant or if I'm sober. Like, it's so weird because we do live in such a corrective world of like, hey, let's be open. Why can't you then on the other foot say, hey, you know what? I actually really hate this. This makes me incredibly uncomfortable. I don't want to hear about this without you then being ghosted, or now you're seen as being lame, or now you're seen as being like, you know, all these horrible words, I think. It's like, what? I'm just trying to be professional and I don't want to talk about our clients' looks. Like, I just think that's crazy. Like, on one hand, we want to be open and all that. But as soon as you shut it down because you're uncomfortable, you're the bad guy. You're the odd man out. Yep. I think that's weird. Yep. That's weird.
I know. So I
fix
said,
it,
you know,
Julie.
Number one.
Julie Gauke for president. Can you fix that, please? Good Lord.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So what I said was, That's one of your options. Another one would be to ignore it. In other words, don't even answer it back. So I said, imagine this text thread. Imagine this partner gets in trouble for sexual harassment someday, and they take his phone and they look at all of his messages, and you're on there in this text thread. You need to be proud
that you never answered.
Yep. That. Imagine. I said, it's like we always say. You know, imagine your behavior at the office on the front page of the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
And how would you feel about that? So I said, when you are responding to these kind of situations, at the very minimum, do not encourage it.
Right, exactly.
And think about what you said, and would you want your female colleagues, the owner of the company, the reader of, you know, the attorneys, and then maybe if it gets even bigger, How would you feel about, did you play along and say things that are inappropriate, even though you knew better, or did you simply deflect and change the subject, which that's what he did.
Yeah.
The whole thing just makes me, like, how do you know? And maybe through this exchange, this partner realized this isn't a person I can have. You know, I can have this type of conversation with.
Or you could be setting a precedent that's like, oh, this person's really down to earth and really cool, and I love their heart. But the fact that they didn't really love this, like, yikes, maybe I should be more careful.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it would set a precedent. Like, I feel like if I were approached by something like that at work and I were to kind of shut it down, I would hope that, you know, because I get along with literally everybody in this place. And I would hope it'd be like, oh, gee, Melissa's like pretty laid back, doesn't really say a word, doesn't really, you know, whatever. So the fact that she had to say something like, yikes, maybe I should. Thankfully, it went to her and not to somebody else where it could have gotten me in trouble. Like, I feel like that's sort of the mindset you should have of, yikes, this could have been worse.
When we talk about Gen Z, they are going to mature. They are going to grow up and look back and cringe. We all look back and cringe.
Well, just like all of us did. Yeah, absolutely. We all did. It didn't matter what generation. We all did cringe-worthy stuff in our teens and our 20s, even 30s. Like, Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, last week for me,
I was just going to say, I feel like I did something cringeworthy this morning. I just can't think about it because my brain shuts off. But yeah, exactly. So
it is a more casual world, and it will continue to be.
Yeah.
But there's always those people of all generations who take it too far and do dumb things at work, whether it's getting drunk at the company party and grabbing somebody. You know, this is always going to be a part of our work lives. And so, you know, I think we've just taken that next step to say life's even looser than it used to be. And how do we feel about that? What do we want to do about it? But
just hold yourself to a little bit of a higher standard, I think.
Yeah. And I would have a good labor and employment lawyer on hand so that you can always show.
That's a good point.
On call so that you can always show that you set the right tone and you stepped in when things got out of line. That's going to help you a lot as an organization. Should it drip over into lawsuit territory.
It's very true. Julie Balke, really appreciate you diving into this. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.
We'll talk next week. Okay, bye.
All right, Julie Balke of Julie on the Job here on WICC.